Welcome to some amazing discussions from the voices of young America. Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. In the next hour, you'll hear from leading women in academics, business, entertainment, and more. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are so thrilled to have the opportunity to speak to our guest today, Sarah Jane Murray, or also known as SJ, who is reinventing the definition of storytelling. It will be able to explain to us why storytelling is so important to our society and the impact that it has all over the world. So SJ, I'd like to welcome you to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited to be here talking about all of this with you.
Likewise. And just to start off the discussion, I would just like to know from you how you came to love the art, if you will, of storytelling.
Well, the short answer is that I'm Irish. the long form answer is, you know, I really credit this in first part to my dad. I think, as I often tell people, my dad read to me every night, but he didn't really believe in stories that were like fairy tales. He didn't really believe in stories that were traditionally written just for girls, for example. He really believed in great stories. And when I was a little kid, he started off reading The Hobbit to me by Tolkien. Mm-hmm. And by the time my brother was born, he started reading The Lord of the Rings. So I sort of grew up surrounded by elves and wizards and quests to bring rings of power to Mordor, to bring and restore justice back to the world. And the sort of message that my dad always gave me through the reading of these stories, whether it be Tolkien or later on when I started to read for myself things like the Chronicles of Narnia, sort of the resounding message that he always affirmed was that, you know, you're a girl, but that doesn't mean that there's anything you can't do. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I could find him also often wrestling with the fact that in a lot of these stories, male characters, you know, took the most exciting roles. So he was a great champion, not only for exposing me to reading, to getting my brain swirling with imaginary places, but also for affirming that, you know, these characters were sort of universal in the sense that they could equally be played by men or women, and that we all have a duty to go out into the world and make it a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think you brought up a point that I never even recognized before. And we bring up the idea that women are often not the lead characters in movies or portrayed not as well in the media compared to men, but I didn't even think that they had inequality within books as well. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, and it's been ongoing for a long time, right? I mean, this is a challenge. When I'm not screenwriting or designing stories, I'm working with students at Baylor, and we have amazing classes in creativity and great books there. And, you know, this is always a challenge when you're looking, the further back in history you go, the harder it is going to be to find female authors. You know, it's just one of the facts. It's not that they simply were all eclipsed, mm-hmm. and their works did not survive. Women just didn't have access to education for a long time. And that makes someone like one of my favorite poetesses from the 12th century, Marie de France, a woman who calls herself Mary and says she comes from France. It's really extraordinary that around 1165, this woman is like actively publishing stories and presenting them to the King of England. We just don't hear about that very much. There's pockets where we see extraordinary female storytellers emerging, but we're going to have to wait until much, much later until women really have, you know, an active role in that space. And we're still seeing that struggle today, for example, with female directors or even writers in feature films today.
Right. Absolutely. And you had a exposure to storytelling as a very young child, like you said, when your dad would read stories to you. And I feel like that might be downplayed as well, that maybe parents don't realize the impact of having your child understand these stories and have them enter the world of storytelling through novels. And like the classics that you mentioned, I'm sure have helped develop what you wanted to do. And you wanted to make your career storytelling. So what made you want to make that interest of yours into a career?
You know, this is a really interesting roundabout journey. And I think it's something that should encourage anybody out there who's thinking it's too late for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because today people start things earlier than ever. I mean, we have more and more opportunities early on, I think, than ever before. With the millennial generation especially, people are really interested in getting engaged in their society and in, you know, making a difference and in their line of work very, very early on. But that's not always the case. And in fact, for writers and storytellers, the blooming often comes a lot later. You need some experience, mm-hmm. and you need to live, and you need to experience, you know, the ups and downs in life to really be able to bring that into stories. So the journey for me did actually begin when I was really little. I had this tiny little moleskin type notepad that I would bring around with me everywhere. And I couldn't have been but 6 or 7, maybe 8 at the time. I just sort of learned to read and write, and my handwriting was really lousy still at the time. But we'd drive around on the way back from my dad's cricket matches in Ireland, and I would sit in the back seat, and I would write little stories and poems especially. And I remember one in particular was inspired by this trip home, and it was dark, and my dad was driving, my mom was sitting up front with him, my brother was beside me, and the big, giant, fluffy standard poodle in the back seat. And my dad suddenly slammed on the brakes, and ahead of us in the road was a little hedgehog, which we don't really have in America. When I moved to Texas, I became convinced that all the rattlesnakes had eaten the hedgehogs, and that's why we didn't have any here. Horrific things. But little hedgehogs are really cute, little tiny, little fluffy heads, and then, you know, they have little pins all over them, and they roll up in a little ball when they get scared. And this hedgehog had been scared of the car, so he had rolled up in a little ball in the middle of the road. And my mom had pointed it out to my dad, and, you know, we managed to save the hedgehog's life, at which point it went waddling off the road. So I wrote, like, very marked by this event, I wrote a tiny little poem, and I later entered it in a poetry and art competition at school. And at the time, I think my teacher probably was not as horrific as I remember, but I was a child, so my memory was really marked by this moment. I cannot draw still to this day to save my life. And so I had to enter like a little painting of the hedgehog and my poem. And I got ridiculed in front of the whole class for having a great poem and a really bad piece of art. And the teacher at the time felt like the lesson, the take-home story from this was that you had to be a good all-rounder in life. It wasn't enough to stand out as a great writer. You had to also be able to do art. And, you know, just for the record, whether marred by that event for life or just because I've grown wiser, I just don't believe that's the case. I think some of us are gifted uniquely in certain areas and others in others. Mm-hmm. So I tell you this story because this actually caused me to completely give up on writing and storytelling. I read books. I no longer wrote. I went home. I put my little notepad in the back of my drawer, and I never took it out again. My parents noticed. They would ask me where my notepad was. And I just told them I didn't do that anymore. It would take like a good 20 years for me, through various pushings and proddings from other teachers who tried to get me to turn back to creative writing and storytelling over the years. It would take me going through a whole PhD in literature and becoming a faculty member who taught primarily in the great books tradition before I would sort of work up the courage again to start writing again. So for me, once I did, the hard work I'd put in to exploring stories and read some of the best minds, you know, in the literary tradition that we have, was able to catapult me forward and to succeed as a writer and filmmaker really quickly. But I just want to stress to anybody who's listening out there and who's thinking, you know, that ship has sailed for me, it's too long, you know, why would I turn to this now? It is never too late to turn back on your creativity, to turn to writing, to look to storytelling for answers, and to put in the hard work to make it happen.
Excellent. That was an amazing story. And I just remember in elementary school how the teachers used to have us do poems and write creative writing, like you mentioned. And a lot of the kids would just think of it as an assignment and wouldn't look into it further, no matter how much they enjoyed it. But I think it's great that you took that and made a true career out of it and is succeeding with that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really fun. You know, what we often say with all the folks, and I owe a lot of people and a lot of mentors along the way, from people like Phil Roman, who was Walt Disney's assistant animator on Sleeping Beauty and went all the way through over the course of his career to create things like the Garfield Christmas specials and Charlie Brown Christmas, and even was one of the creators of The Simpsons. And then someone like Joni Livingston in Texas, who really initiated me into the field of documentary filmmaking, and others, you know, just across the world. Richard Walter, one of my teachers at UCLA. I mean, all of them have really nurtured my passion and shown me that it's possible to succeed in it. And I think that's the key. If you want to write, you have to write because deep down inside you can't do differently. And the fun part about it is if you embrace that side of your creativity, you'll never feel like you're working a day in your life. I mean, yes, you will bang your head against a wall when you can't get your story to go in the direction it needs to go. But as I often tell folks who study writing with me, that's a rhythm that you learn. There's ups and downs to the creative process. Mm-hmm. All of them are equally exciting and interesting, whether you're soaring high because the writing's coming easily or you're wrestling through a tough patch. Mm-hmm. What writing and creativity is really allowing you to do is wrestle with issues in your own life as well. And, you know, you're writing to change the world. You're writing to bring hope to people. You're writing to restore, you know, the possibility of a bright future in some cases, or to ward off a dangerous one. And that never comes easily, nor should it. So it should also be something to strive for, but it's really fun in the process.
Awesome. And SJ, we are just getting started with our discussion, but we are going to go to our first break. If you want to hear more about what we are doing with Women Investing in Women and the radio show as well, go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use #womeninvest, #girlsinvest, or #investinwomen.
Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Join us every week for the Paper Hope Street Team. None of our topics are off the table. This is a program that you can listen to and discuss with your family. From the pages of the Paper Hope blog to the internet radio airwaves, we'll talk about the topics you want to talk about, such as friendship and relationships, or some more controversial issues about sex, drugs, and underage drinking. Join the Paper Hope Street Team live every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Kids channel. Let's talk soon.
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk.
You are
radio.
Listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to get right back to our conversation with Sarah Jane Murray. And before we went to the break, we talked a little bit about SJ's background and how having her father read stories to her as a child has helped cultivate this interest in writing and storytelling and has helped make it a career for her. And SJ, I'd love to know about your work with Livingston and McKay now and how that relationship has helped develop your storytelling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a great relationship and great friendship. You know, Joni Livingston and Renee McKay serve as my managers also. And the fun story there is my friendship with Joni Livingston goes back about, it must be like 10, 11, maybe even 12 years now, when I was still, just newly out of graduate school and teaching literature. Joni would quite regularly look me up and take me out to lunch. We'd worked on a recruitment video together. She at the time was running the TV department for the local PBS station and had helped put together some recruiting materials for my university. I'd been interviewed during them. And I really have to credit Joni with sitting me down and telling me, you know, you're a great storyteller. Why are you not doing more of this? Why are you only teaching what other people say in stories? And it took about 9 years of Joni asking me to give it a shot for writing a documentary for PBS and me constantly pushing back and saying I didn't do that until this one point of convergence in time came that I was invited to come out and do some work in preparing to read scripts out in California. And I reconnected with Joni, and Joni and Renee went on to bring me aboard for a documentary they were working on at the time called Primary Concern. And it's actually still airing on PBS. And it was an amazing experience. I mean, I realized that the skills I had learned in books and the skills I had learned just in sorting through, you know, working with students and thinking about how traditions of storytelling come into play over time really did apply to helping tell a great story in a documentary film. So this film, Primary Concern, was about the shortage of primary care physicians in the United States. I learned more just scary things about the state of healthcare in America by researching that film. For example, it's likely that by 2025, we'll be short 166,000 doctors in America.
Wow.
So if you're out there thinking about going to medical school, please go to medical school. We need more doctors and we need more primary care physicians. You can imagine what that looks like if America is hit by an epidemic, for example. But we also have a shortage of doctors across all specialties that's coming to the forefront. And part of that is due to the fact that we capped the medical residencies back in 1997. So the population continues to grow. The number of people, no matter how many people graduate from medical school, the number of people who can actually practice medicine in the United States is restricted by the number of residencies. And we've just got all kinds of problems facing us on the horizon. Mm-hmm. So here I was, really excited to get to participate in sort of telling America, you know, hey, this is not a simple problem. There's not one single answer. And in fact, this film is not going to try and give you an answer. It's going to try to show you that whether you're in rural America or if you're in urban America, we're all facing this problem. And it's the most sobering issue America will have faced well beyond like fights about insurance or anything else we can think about in the medical field. The reality is if we do not have enough doctors, it does not matter what kind of plan you have, you will not be able to see a doctor. Mm-hmm. So I felt a great sense of responsibility, you know, working on this film. And that's what really framed through that relationship with Joni Livingston and Renee McKay. It really framed my understanding of the purpose that documentary films are supposed to fulfill, you know, in the world, which is to bring information in a story digestible form to the general public. And it was really exciting. That film went on to be, it was my first, it went on to be nominated for an Emmy Award.
Wow.
Which was really affirming and brought me all kinds of new opportunities. So I'm really grateful to the relationship I have with them. They're just fun to work with. They're great, great people.
Great. And the way that you get involved with these different documentaries and films, I think is pretty interesting because I noticed that you like to focus on social impact and different causes that not only affect America, but affect the rest of the world as well. So I'd like to touch on some of those. You talked about Primary Concern and about healthcare and the issues that we face in America. And then you also worked on a documentary called Ineffable, if you'd like to explain a little bit about that one too.
Yeah, Ineffable is a new show that we're actually filming at the moment, and we might have one or two more interviews left to do, but we are in post-production on that and on a short that goes with it called What is Art? Mm-hmm. And What is Art and Ineffable really pose the question of, you know, as we marginalize the arts, which we are doing in our society, what are the kind of things that we lose? How do we lose part of our humanity in pushing these things to the margin? You know, as a friend of mine in New York, an amazing painter, Mako Fujimura, always likes to say, the artist kind of stands further ahead than most of society. And if we imagine the end of time, you know, they're there at the brink before anybody ever sees it coming and they're just staring into the abyss. And there's something about that healthy marginalization of the artist who finds themselves outside the norms of regular day-to-day life and sees a bigger picture that's really important for all of us. The arts help us transcend, you know, our day-to-day condition. One of the examples that really touches me every time I think about it is there was an amazing composer, Massenet, who was taken captive in a German work camp in the Second World War. And the person who was supervising the camp, by miracle, recognized him and made his work in the camp to compose. And compose he did. And he wrote a quartet called The Quartet for the End of Time. And as other musicians were interned in the camp during the Second World War, they were allowed to work with Messiaen on this piece. So I want you to imagine what it must have been like in the midst of a concentration camp to sit one night when you had not heard music for years. You know, this is sort of like the scene in Shawshank, in the movie, in The Shawshank Redemption, when Andy plays the opera over the loudspeaker in the prison and you see people just transfixed. They're reminded of something bigger than themselves. So Messiaen premieres this piece during the war inside the concentration camp. And for the couple of hours that everybody came together to hear it, I imagine that somehow the condition of the concentration camp was transcended and people remembered that, you know, they were bigger than the moment at hand. And we may not be living in anything like, you know, a concentration camp in World War II today, but our society does have a lot of problems and a lot of issues. And it worries me that we view the arts as this added value. Maybe you do them, maybe you don't, but they're not an essential part of life. When for me, they're at the core of what it means to be human and what it means to be better humans. So that's the idea that the documentary is attempting to address by looking at dance and music and poetry and the future with technology and thinking about what do we have to preserve? Why do we have to nurture this culture? And we're so blessed to get to work with people like Christine Kim, a Grammy-nominated cellist in New York, and Tim Fain, the amazing violinist who did the work for 12 Years a Slave and for Black Swan, and this amazing light installation that was created to play along with music by Alex Green, and then other people like amazing dancers and an amazing painter like Mako and like Jose Nadeau in Park City, Utah. So it's a really exciting project for me and very dear to my heart. Absolutely. This is what's very key. You know, art provides us with a reminder that we're all part of a community that's bigger than our national dependence, right? So, you know, whatever it is that you might believe in, like for my part, for example,
are you ready to explore the amazing world under the sea? Your host is a certified scuba diver, explorer. He likes to cook, and most of all, he's just a kid like you. You'll find out a lot more lies under the sea than what you've seen on TV, in movies, and even in aquatic parks. You'll learn about all kinds of fish, as well as other sea creatures. We'll take you to some exotic destinations and so much more. There's a whole big world under sea just waiting to be discovered. Tune in to Under the Sea, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Kids.
You know, friendship begins at that moment.
Sometimes we may sound strange, but remember, we're just kids with opinions. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
They might not even know each other.
There's so much going on in the tech field. The tech team is here to sort it all out so that you know exactly what you need to get and what you should avoid. In this age of cell phones and text messaging and new discoveries every single day, you need to be informed. We'll bring you previews of new products, technology news, and help you make the right decision when you are out there buying that new MP3 player, cell phone, or mobile device. Don't do a thing until you've tuned in to the tech team. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids.
Looking for an on-air community where teens talk and the world listens? Tune in to Express Yourself, an entertaining
adolescent fusion radio program where passion and possibility populate the airwaves. Our vivacious teen hosts and star-studded field reporters from around the country offer stimulating segments and invigorating viewpoints connecting with the world campus of young people. We'll talk with cool celebrities, exhilarating experts, and tenacious teens with experience. Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids. Express yourself. What do you want to do? Are you interested in the performing arts? If so, make sure you tune in to the Angel and Harmony Show. Angel and Harmony have experience singing, acting, and performing in general and want to help you live out your dreams of the future. Whether you are interested in acting, modeling, dancing, or singing, this is the show for you. We'll even give you the scoop on being behind the scenes if you're a little shy. The Angel and Harmony Show is heard live every Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
What's cooking? Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at hashtag Women Invest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. And we're going right back to our conversation with our guest today, Sarah Jane Murray, who is definitely able to tell us why storytelling is changing the way that we work as a culture and how she's able to contribute to that as well. Before we went to the break, we talked about a few projects that SJ is working on, Ineffable and Primary Concern, two films, for example. And SJ, you are also an author, and I love the fact that you are not only helping to develop your own stories and have your own work put out there, but you're helping other artists and storytellers have their work out there too. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's something I'm really passionate about. You know, I've had extraordinary blessings in my life from the moment I was a little kid that my dad took the time to read to me, to all of the attention my parents paid to my education, to the time I got to spend, you know, as an undergraduate and as a graduate student and also studying abroad. And I mean, these opportunities are not, I realize, open to everyone. So one of the things that became really important to me was not just to empower students within a traditional university setting to be able to write, you know, great stories. We need great storytellers out there in the world. We know today that the way our brains function on stories is like nothing else. Like, I know that in sharing a story with you, someone like Elie Wiesel, when he takes us walking through the concentration camps, it's as if I'm there. As far as my brain is concerned, there's very little difference in the mirroring process that takes place between the person who tells the story and the person who's listening to the story. So it's one of our best forms of connecting human beings and of dealing with important issues. And I don't think that should be reserved for folks who simply have, by virtue of where they've grown up and how they've been educated, have access to that. You know, I think Malcolm Gladwell makes a really good point in his book, Outliers, that all of our stories of success, sure, they're due to grit, absolutely, as Angela Duckworth points out. Sure, they are due to this fortitude to keep going and to put in the hard work. But we are also the product of the opportunities that have been piling up from the moment that we were born. And with that in mind, about a year ago, I wanted to share like basic story outlining, for example, for feature films and for novels with anybody who wanted to learn it. And I was very concerned that you can go out there on the internet and there's lots of people who will take a lot of money from you to promise to teach you this kind of stuff. And it's a really lucrative business. And I think that I was really motivated to disrupt that a little bit, to use that kind of buzzword that's out there in the field of social impact. And so we decided to create a free story worksheet that we would give away to anybody for free. Like anybody can have access to this. And then to take a sort of full story development course and to archive it in a little snippet for a very small price and fee compared to the kind of fees that you usually pay for a class. And I was just overwhelmed when we threw this out into the world to see the response. Like people are excited no matter where they live about writing stories. And now the worksheet is used in like 135 countries. You can find it just by, you know, going online, look on social media, Google the free story worksheet and my name, it'll come up. Or look on the Livingston McKay homepage. There's a link to it. And the response was overwhelming. I mean, we had people writing in. One that really sticks out to me was a young man who wrote in from his local library in Zimbabwe. And he had walked to the library to do some research on writing and to prepare for a writer's group that they were going to be having in his village. And he got a hold of the free story worksheet and he brought it back. And for a workshop that they used across the whole country, now they were able to teach story structure to all these young people in Zimbabwe who wanted to learn how to tell great stories.
Awesome.
And that's just so exciting to me, right? Like we all have this in our hearts. We're all innately storytellers. It's something that unites us everywhere. And we can prove this scientifically now. Like we know that our brains respond to stories in certain ways, that stories help us share our vulnerabilities, that being presented to new information in stories triggers things like releases of dopamine in our brains that make us excited about learning.
Mm-hmm.
And there's absolutely no reason that that should be reserved for a privileged few. So part of my mission is to try to bring that power and art of storytelling to people across the world in so much as I can.
Excellent. And besides this worksheet that you mentioned, you also wrote a book, correct?
Yeah. There's a couple of little short books on Snippet out there right now. One's called Three Act What, and that's the sort of condensing of a story workshop that I used to teach out in California. And then Hardwired for Story, which was inspired by a recent TEDx that I did on the power of storytelling. And then on the horizon, actually, very soon, it's in press at the moment and will be available in print soon. People were so responsive to this that we're also releasing a paperback called Basics of Story Design that should be available, you know, on Amazon.com and at bookstores near you in the next few months. And then probably this summer, we're going to release a Story for Education book because I've been asked to speak at a lot of conferences on education to look at how we can use story to empower our classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to address that. And then in the long term, there is a book project in process, just an outlining stage for a much larger review of like the place story holds in the world and its influence on society and culture and on shaping our lives and how it works. But that'll be something that comes out in a couple of years.
Fantastic. That's some very exciting news. You have a very busy year, it sounds like. So that's awesome.
Yes. You know, I decided about 2 years ago that I had to learn to banish the word busy from my vocabulary, although I use it all the time still. So what I always say now is like things are really good and they're really productive and there's lots of opportunities. And, you know, as my entrepreneur friend, Kevin Rostogi at Stanford University taught me, the one thing we all have in very short supply and in limited supply is time. Time is our most valuable commodity. And this is sort of a good lesson, I think, for anybody out there listening to that I just want to transfer to all of you. You know, time is our most valuable commodity, as Kevin told me, and you have to use it wisely. So the great thing is you never feel busy anymore if you're picking wisely to do things that are important to you and that have outreach. And that does not mean that you need to be creating story worksheets or going and talking at education conferences or giving TED Talks or writing movies. It can be as simple as using that time, as we have seen today, to read to your children or to write a letter to your great-great-grandchildren that you may never meet. The moment we put meaning back into the time that we spend, busyness sort of goes out the window, you know, and happiness comes in to replace it.
Love it. That's some great advice. And to bring that point into something that you talk about a lot is the term hardwired for story, that you say that as humans, we are hardwired for story. So how does that impact us?
It's really amazing. you know, this is something when I started writing, I had no idea about, because we had not explored it yet in the fields of neuroscience. But today, we can actually prove scientifically a lot of the things that Aristotle thought like 2,000 years ago. So Aristotle thought, for example, that the most impactful types of stories are stories that are told in three parts with clear beginnings, middles, and ends that serve certain purposes. And now the research of someone like Paul Zak out at Claremont Graduate School in California literally shows us that when we as human beings are exposed to those three part, we call them three act structure narratives, and that they're well told, and that we wrestle along with the character who goes through struggles. You know, you can recognize any of your favorite movies here, and they have to fight it all against all odds to either come out on top or be defeated. Our brains actually respond to that by triggering releases of cortisol and oxytocin into our bloodstream. And what that means is that literally, as our brains confront the information in well-told three-act narratives, we experience stress and we experience bonding just the same way we do in real life. So I might feel for the character as they struggle and release cortisol for stress under that influence, but I will also release oxytocin, the bonding chemical that creates empathy. And it's at those moments that we are more open to receiving messages about how we might live our lives, or in the case of advertising, what products we should buy, what causes we should support. So it's really important for me that people understand that nobody is immune to the power of storytelling. And ethically, we really need to be aware of this, because storytelling is being used in advertising everywhere at the moment. You know, puppies sell more beer than pictures of beer do. And that's why we have great Super Bowl commercials with puppies and horses and struggles to get home to be with their friends. So we are literally living immersed in these narratives that are being given to us, whether it be from advertising or from social groups or from larger constructs. And the best way to be able to control your own narrative is to be aware of the influences that surround you out there in the world. The other drug that I mentioned a little bit earlier that is part of our hardwiring for story is dopamine. And dopamine, I always like to say, is our friend, because dopamine is highly addictive. It's really something that the human body just strives on. And dopamine is released, for example, every time we encounter something new or interesting or presented to us in a new fashion. And stories do that. They provide the means for us to see our lives anew. Anybody who's watched Pixar's Academy Award-winning short For the Birds will never look at birds on a telegraph pole again in the same way. Mm-hmm. And that'll continue on for the rest of their lives, because dopamine is sort of like a save button for your brain. It allows an idea or a concept or a principle to become sticky and stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, just to sort of round that out, I've already mentioned this idea of neural coupling or brain mirroring. That's something that somebody like Uri Hassan of Princeton University studies a lot, which literally shows us that our brains are hardwired to sync up when we share stories. So if you were to share with me right now a story about your childhood, and you told me about how it was raining that day and the kind of wind there was and the colors and there was motion, my brain would be mirroring the story just as you lived it. It's also, this will be my closing idea here, firm and convincing proof that the way we do seminars and teaching and learning often doesn't work. You know, we've all sat in those crazy meetings with the PowerPoint slides and the people talking, and we all sit around a desk. And the reality is that when you're processing words on a screen or words because somebody is speaking, only the part of your brain that processes language is working. Whereas when you hear a story and it's full of movement and color and emotion and smells and tastes, the parts, if I told you right now, oh, I'm such a coffee drinker. When we get done talking today, I'm going to go to my favorite coffee shop in Austin. I'm going to get this awesome cortado and just the smell that comes off of it. Then believe it or not, the other coffee drinkers out there listening today, the part of their brain that senses smells is just like going all kinds of crazy. And I'm sorry for all of you out there. You probably all want a coffee now too. So we were made this way. Our brains connect to stories.
Perfect.
And stories influence our brains like nothing else. We are literally
awesome.
Hardwired for story.
Awesome. Thank you so much, SJ. We'll be right back right after this break. Stay tuned. Mm-hmm.
What about the world concerns you? Is it future success? Is it world issues? Are you just looking to change the world in general? Tune in to What Up World. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, or what you look like. Everyone is entitled to the same chance for success. Follow your dreams. Move forward. Make a difference. Tune in to What Up World every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk radio.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to go ahead and wrap up our conversation now with our last segment with Sarah Jane Murray, SJ. And before we went to the break, we talked more about the impact of storytelling. And in the very beginning of our discussion, we talked about how women have actually been represented inequally within the stories as well. So SJ, I'd like to know how the progress of storytelling has developed and the way that girls and women are now being represented more.
Yeah, sure. You know, there are so many extraordinary women working out in the field there today. And I think that's really important to know, just because they might not be represented in as large numbers at some of the big award shows you see in traditional medium. There's so many interesting people doing research on storytelling and on new forms of storytelling. In fact, I just want to throw out there, anybody who wants to explore new frontiers of storytelling, some of my friends are involved in this amazing two-day event in New York City every fall called The Future of Storytelling, and the call to participate in it is still open now. So I do recommend that people go out there and think about that. When it comes to women in films, you know, this might be really interesting to you to realize that the mainstream is taking notice. We do realize there's a problem. And so narratives that feature strong female characters are very much in demand. However, there is still a shortage of them. And you can think about this really easily if you look at amazing actresses we have out there, like Jessica Chastain and Meryl Streep and, you know, Glenn Close and all these different people who are actively seeking roles that they want to play and pass on. Patricia Arquette just talked about this at the Oscars also. Even the inequality in pay does spill over, you know, to acting, to directing, and to other storytelling areas.
Right.
So I don't want by any means to give the impression that things have really equaled out. However, you'll see, I think the success of something like Frozen in the past couple of years, and don't worry, I won't do my impersonation of the Let It Go song for you that has been plaguing you for months if you have children in the house. But this was a great move forward, I think, for Disney. Because here we had a story with two remarkable Disney princess still characters, right? Who are very feminine, and they're women, you know, they embrace their womanhood, but it's a story of strong sisters and of sisterly love that triumphs over all. It's even sort of funny at the end as Sven is riding in on his reindeer, you know, to come and rescue them. The girls don't need Sven. They don't need the little snowman either. They need each other.
Right.
And I think that this is one of the great models we need to think about going forward. You know, women in their relationships, really, is it that the industry is reflecting how women are in their relationships, or is it that it's dictating the way they're formed? And I think for a long time, you know, probably this idea of women in less active, you know, business or spy roles or, you know, whatever it might be, or running kingdoms, certainly didn't fit as a reflection of the times. The problem is the narratives that we are sharing in our culture really need to catch up with the times.
Right.
Like, I am so inspired by so many amazing women and friends who are out there doing extraordinary things to help impact the world. And that doesn't change the fact that they're also women who, in many cases, are very happily married and have very happy family lives, but that have bought into a narrative where it is possible to balance all of these things. And I think that the more portrayals of that we see in the media, and these are things we do not yet see as much as we ought to, the more young women will be able to dream of fulfilling that dream as well. And that's a problem. I mean, there's this sort of idea, we have a dichotomy out there in the media where you're either like the badass, you know, spy, like Jessica Chastain's character in, I'm trying to remember the movie now, a few years ago, about hunting down the old Nazi doctor. And in that case, you know, if you're the badass spy and you're out there and you're having your spy life, you don't really have much of a life at home, or you're an extraordinary mother and extraordinary home life person, in which case, you know, you don't have the extraordinary career opportunities. And sometimes you're shown as regretting that in the movies, which I think is equally harmful. This idea that, oh, I gave up my life for this and now I'm unhappy. What I want to see out there in the media is extraordinary women who may happen to have amazing lives at home, who are eager to contribute and impact to the world in their careers, and who are able to have it all by instituting this kind of balance of purpose and meaning, which allows them to be full human beings. You know, I know plenty of people like that, from Anu at Women Investing in Women to Rachel Cohen-Gerald, co-founder of the Nexus Youth Summit. You know, the list I could cite for you goes on and on of extraordinary women who are balancing both facets of their life. I wish I could tell you that that had evolved a lot in the media today. It has not yet. What is evolving is our sense that there's a problem there. And so that means, like, we need more women writing. We need more women directing. We need more people realizing that you can succeed in these fields, but we need you to get out there and showcase your talents and give it a try and be trailblazers. This is an opportunity to really help reform the industry and give extraordinary models like the girls in Frozen for the young ladies growing up around the world today.
Excellent. And with that being said, how do you believe that you have personally invested in women and girls?
You know, I like to think that I invest in people, and I invest in people's passions. So for me, whether someone is a young man or a young woman that shows up in my class, they're going to get exactly the same treatment. However, they might get slightly different encouragement because, you know, we're wired slightly differently as men and women, and we respond, you know, to different forms of encouragement. So one of the ways I like to invest in women and young girls is to consider it a completely even playing ground when people show up to my class or when they're working on a project with me. Everybody is a valuable team member. Everybody has an extraordinary gift to bring to the table, and they deserve to be treated as such.
Right.
When it comes down to a little bit of more of the realities that we see in things like Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, or Diana Patterson's book, Work, Love, Pray, you know, the other way I think that I'm committed to investing in women who come after me is in the workplace, pointing out when people might be treating me a little differently because I'm a woman, or expecting something else from me on an assignment. I think it's really important that we speak up in kindness and not in a difficult way, to just say, hey, I've just noticed this and it's a little awkward for me. So championing and speaking up and making people aware of the inherent discrepancies between businesses that can function a little bit like old boys clubs and now more women being present in them, I think it's really important for those of us who are out there to speak up in kindness and to simply not to ask for special treatment, but just to be asked to be treated equally on the basis of the work we do and on the merit of the work that we're doing. The day that people, you know, can look at women in the workplace and respect and admire them for everything that makes them women out in the world, you know, I'm never opposed or against somebody being polite and kind and holding the door open for me when I'm carrying a bag. I just also want to be respected for the equal work I bring to the table. And that's something that I think we all have to invest in now so that the young women who are growing up today have that as just a given inherent right, no matter what country they're in. And obviously, depending on the political makeup of those countries, there's a lot of work to be done. So it's people like you and me who have been given a lot of opportunities who can really be spokespersons for that in everything we do and not be afraid to take on young female mentees when we're presented with those opportunities. I think women-to-women mentorships are very important because they're the best way we can learn to navigate the sort of difficulties in the system that another woman has already navigated. I have many male mentors who are amazing, but the female mentors I really value because they have experienced firsthand some of the same difficulties I might experience. So I'm very grateful for that. And for me, it becomes a system of paying it forward so that I do the same for others.
Amazing. Sarah Jane, it's been an absolute honor to have you on our show today. We love the inspiration that you were able to give to our listeners, and we hope that they take it in and do something incredible with their lives just like you are. So thank you again for being a part of our program.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's really been a great time, and I just believe in so much in what you're doing. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And we'd like to thank our listeners for listening as well. You've been listening to Women Investing, Women and Girls. Remember, we do want to hear from you. Go to Twitter and use the hashtag WomenInvest, hashtag GirlsInvest, or hashtag InvestWomen to make your comments, or go to Facebook.com/WomenInvesting. This show is produced by KidStar Radio for the Voice America Kids Network, and KidStar Radio, we empower kids.
Thank you for joining us today. Your hosts will be back next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, for another edition of Women Investing in Women and Girls on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll talk then.
My name is Lindsay Marie from Bookworm. Now from the KidStar Album of the Month, here is the Whiz Pops and their song, Blue Wave. That was the Whiz Pops from the Kidstar Album of the Month.